Okay, welcome back to 2S, the Horror Quarters Podcast. I want to thank you for joining me again. It's been a while since I've done an episode. I've been extremely busy, but thank you for hanging in there with me. This particular episode covers the Dallas PD ambush shooting that took place July 7th, 2016, near the intersection of Lamar and Main Street in front of El Central College in Dallas, Texas. I had been down there to cover the JFK case, and while I was there, because it is so close to where JFK was assassinated in 1963, I wanted to also get the coverage of this. It's a very sensitive topic, a very sensitive subject. Just the year before, in 2015, a man by the name of James Bull Ware rolled up to Dallas Police Department headquarters and started firing a barrage of bullets into the building, into the glass doors and windows, and led police on a chase. I believe it was about 10 miles to the city of Hutchins. And this man was in a van that was loaded with firearms. It had gun slots on it. He led the police on a high-speed chase to the city of Hutchins and ended up in a parking lot of a Jack in the Box. And police had to use a sniper to shoot a 50 cal round into the van's engine block to disable it, and then had to put another round into the suspect, killing him inside of the van. Now, the suspect got on the phone and told police he blames law enforcement for his son being taken away from him. Here is footage here of the van being detonated by the bomb squad. He told police that inside of the van there were explosives, so they sent in a robot and blew the van up. Here's a Google Earth image of Dealey Plaza and El Central College. You can see the proximity to each other in a straight line. It is roughly 1,300 feet, or just over 1,300 feet, and just about three blocks. Of course, this happened during a peaceful protest, and the individual who started firing upon police officers and with the crowd around was not part of this peaceful protest. This protest had to do with demonstrations to protest the shootings, the recent police shootings in a couple of other states. Again, I want to reiterate, the suspect was not part of this peaceful protest. An individual by the name of Micah Xavier Johnson parked his vehicle on Lamar Street on the east side, right in front of El Central College, left his flashers blinking, got out, and walked southbound on Lamar to Main Street. With a tan body armor vest of some sort, he opened fire at that intersection. The intersection being Lamar and Main Street. And in doing so, he killed Senior Corporal Lauren Ahrens, Officer Michael Kroll, and Officer Patricio Patrick Zamaripa. Injured in this general area were Senior Corporal Ivan Saldana, Officer Jorge Barrientos, Officer Gretchen Rocha, and civilian Shatamia Taylor. Johnson then turned around and headed northbound on Lamar, back towards where his vehicle was parked. Here is a Google Earth image of where the suspect parked his vehicle, which was right about here, and walked southbound towards the intersection there of Lamar and Main, and that's where he opened fire. Here is some of our footage, and you can see the demonstration was headed eastbound, and this is a closer shot of the intersection of Lamar and Main, where the suspect opened fire. He then turned around and headed northbound back towards where his vehicle was parked. And as he headed north, to his left were glass doors that would gain entrance into the college. He fired upon these glass doors, trying to get through that way. And in doing so, he wounded two El Central police officers who were inside of the building, just on the other side of the glass doors. Officer John Abbott and Corporal Brian Shaw were on the inside of those doors. Unable to get through, Johnson continued northbound. Here's the area here, the doors that the suspect fired into and shattered at the time he was trying to gain entrance into the building at this location. As Johnson continued northbound, he came across a DART officer by the name of Brent Thompson and began to engage gunfire. As Officer Brent Thompson took cover behind the pillar, the suspect fired to one side of the pillar and came around the other side of the pillar, coming up behind Officer Thompson and killing him. It was at this time that Officer John Abbott was able to exit El Centro College and try and help out Officer Brent Thompson, but of course it was too late at this point. Micah Johnson then made a left onto Elm Street, heading westbound, where he shot his way and gained entrance through doors on that side. Johnson rounded the corner here and headed towards the El Centro College archway, where he entered the building there by shooting through those doors. Once Johnson entered El Centro College, he began to leave a blood trail from his injuries. Heading up the stairway, Corporal Shaw was able to follow the suspect. Shaw was fired upon during this time but was not hit. Johnson then made his way up to the second floor and across a mezzanine to another part of the building, to the north side of the building.
Officer Hernandez and myself were near the Main Street entrance doors when we heard some gunfire. So then we took off. I called down the radio and started heading to Lamar Street because that's where I knew the area that it was at. We made it over to the Lamar Street entrance. Officer Abbott and myself, there's two sets of doors there. We made it through the first set, then we started receiving fire. I was shot on my left side, so we retreated. I went back with Officer Hernandez and Officer Pouncey to retrieve the tactical gear and the ARs. We went back to the Lamar Street side, and then that's when we noted there was gunfire on the Elm Street side. So we made our way to the Elm Street side, noticed a trail of blood going up to a stairwell. We made entry into the stairwell, received fire, and that's whenever we went and met up with DPD and then started checking the first floor of the building.
And we went through the Lamar Street door, immediately started taking fire. The glass door exploded in front of me. Then we, as you said, we pulled back to go get tactical gear. I recognized the rifle fire, held the door with Officer Mon. I made egress once. There was still firing going on. I pulled back in. Went out a second time, locked onto what turns out to be the subject vehicle. DPD at that point was still exchanging fire and told me to go back inside. I managed to get back in, held the door as Corporal was coming up. DPD was pushing forward. I joined in with those guys and noted officer was down on the street or on the sidewalk about 20 feet up. Grabbed him, pulled him back out of line of fire. Turns out it was Officer DART Officer Brent Thompson, who's a friend of mine. Tried to perform any medical aid I could on him at that point, but he was pretty much gone. We loaded him in a vehicle. He was evacuated from the scene as we went around the corner or getting ready to go around the corner to re-engage the fight. Corporal Shaw called on the radio, said he was inside the building. DPD and I then re-entered the building from Lamar Street, started securing the floors at that point.
From a window on the north side of the building, Johnson fired down onto Elm Street, striking and killing Sergeant Michael Smith just in front of the 7-Eleven convenience store. Here's a Google Earth image of where the 7-Eleven is. I don't know why this particular photo doesn't have the 7-Eleven sign. I do know when I went earlier this year, there was a 7-Eleven there. But nonetheless, you can see in relation to where El Centro College is, it's directly across the street. This photo here is presumably the window that the suspect fired out of down onto the street, down onto Sergeant Michael Smith. DART Officer Jesus Reitana was struck in the tricep as well in that general area. At this point, many police officers en route inside of the building trying to catch the suspect. Micah Johnson ended up down a hallway that dead-ended into an alcove type of area where he was holed up. He was engaging in gunfire. This is Sergeant Larry Gordon, who was the SWAT negotiator for the Dallas Police Department at the time. And Sergeant Gordon was the one having communications with Johnson, pretty much yelling down a corridor back and forth at each other.
He was really upset about the shootings. I teach a lot of classes on de-escalation, so I knew the stats on the shootings when you break them down by race. And I told him that most people in this country that are shot are white males. He didn't believe me.
I think you have a valid point. But listen to me, X, can you hear me? I can't hear your point because I'm too worried about being shot.
He wanted all of us to transition tonight. And I said, what do you mean transition? He said, transition from this life to the next. So I'm thinking, oh, okay, he wants us to die. So I knew I had to get the emotionality down to get the rationality up.
At approximately 1:30 a.m., a remote control robot was sent in, loaded with C4. The robot was detonated and Johnson was killed. There were two handguns and what has been described as an AK-74 next to the suspect's body. Because of the amount of gunfire, initially it was thought that it was more than one shooter. A couple of suspects were arrested and released, and based on the investigation, it was a lone shooter. Here is Shatamia Taylor talking about what happened to her that night.
It was a pause and there was a second shot. And the police officer, I saw him, kind of tall, hefty, white guy, bald. I remember seeing him. And that second shot, he kind of, as he was going down, he said he has a gun. Run. I'm sorry. He said he has a gun. He has a gun. Run. And my kids started running. And I wanted to make sure that they were all in front of me, so they started running up the block. And I was running behind them. And I felt the bullet. I don't know if it bounced off the ground or what, but I felt it when it hit me in the back of my leg. And my son, Andrew, had turned around to grab me. Because I guess he turned around to see where I was and he went to grab me, but I had already been shot. So I tackled him and pushed him into the street. And I think he hit the car and we ended up in between the car and the curb. And I just laid on top of him. And police officers that started coming up the block. And one of them, I heard him when he said, is anybody hit? My son said no, because he didn't know I was shot. And I was saying yes, but I wasn't saying it loud enough so my son could hear me, because I didn't want him to hear me. And the officer said it again, kind of loud. And I said, yes, sir, I'm hitting my leg. And the other officer jumped on top of me and covered me and my son. And there was another one at our feet. And there was another one over our head. And there was several of them lined against the wall over there. And they stayed there with us. And I saw another officer. Saw another officer get shot right there in front of me again. That was two.
I want to thank you for joining me again on another true crime episode, and we will see you on the next one.
So I wanted to bring in active police officer Dan Wells and retired police officer Sean Battle to get their thoughts on the Dallas PD ambush shooting. How you guys doing today?
Doing good.
Doing good. How you doing?
I'm all right. So I went there to the actual site of the shooting, which occurred on July 7, 2016. And about three blocks from where JFK was assassinated. It's pretty close. Sean, you were there within the last couple of years, right?
Correct. I actually went there. I went there to see the JFK thing. My daughter was actually in town playing basketball for her travel ball team. So I decided to take a trip. And I ended up stumbling on that scene. Actually, it was the second or third anniversary of the actual shooting when I was there. But like I said, I happened to be there because I wanted to go see the JFK thing. And like you said, it was about three blocks away.
Yeah, it's like, I think like 1,300 feet or something in a straight line. So when you got there, what kind of first hit you? And what were your thoughts just looking around at the buildings and the layout based on what you saw, the footage and everything?
Of course, being a retired officer, you know, it brought a little bit of uneasiness to me. I was amazed at how close it was to that scene, first of all, to the JFK scene.
Yeah.
And just seeing where there were so many people in the street, there were so many different things going on, and then to know that these officers were gunned down right there was kind of surreal.
Yeah, exactly. And then so did you kind of envision, if you were there, how difficult it would be, just because of, it's almost like a canyon. I know Dealey Plaza is described as a canyon where everything echoes. You really don't know where
it's coming from. If anybody watched that footage, you would see so many people out there. And there are some, it's pretty much in a downtown area. And the way the buildings are structured, I'm sure the shots would echo from this building to that building, back to that building. And you have no idea where those shots are coming from. Right. You also have a tremendous amount of people out there with so many things going on. Emotions are high and everything else. So it would be, and trying to envision that and think about what would I do in that situation is very tough. Because looking around, when I was there, there was no one there as far as a crowd or, you know, people mad or whatever the case is. So looking around, things are a lot more calm now. I had time to think. I had time to envision what I would do if this, if that, and if I saw this. But when stuff hits the fan, it's a little more real, so to speak.
Yeah. And initially the law enforcement thought there were multiple shooters. The first reports on the news were they thought it was three or four shooters from like a high rise.
Right.
You know, shooting down. Dan, when you kind of saw what was going on there and saw the footage, what went through your mind in relation to, you know, your experience?
I mean, it's chaos. You know, you can never be ready when something like that happens. Most of the reports say that it was a very calm protest from the beginning.
Yeah.
Police officers at the protest had actually relaxed to the point where they were taking photos with protesters and actually had a kind of a good thing going on.
Sure.
And I'm sure they're still on high alert, but they weren't thinking about that at the time. Most of these police officers, it seemed, thought this was going pretty well. This was a peaceful protest, like people had been wanting to see, and things just happened.
Yeah, this guy here, he wasn't part of that protest at all. He was on his own. He did his own thing, and he, you know, he endangered, obviously, the protesters. One of the civilians was hit, Shatamia Taylor. She was hit. She survived. And she was saying prayers for, you know, the fallen officers, you know, while she was hospitalized. So, I mean, it affected the residents there, the civilians. In that type of gunfire, you guys are taught to, is it take cover or go straight to where you hear the gunfire, or a little bit of both based on the terrain?
It's a little bit of both. You're taught to get to the gunfire, but you can't go to the gunfire if you don't know where it's coming from. So to take cover for a second, you know, gather yourself, find out what you need to know. But then, yeah, you have to move towards the threat at some point.
Okay. And then Sean, there were five, well, we didn't know this till, you know, once all the dust settled, but there were fallen officers there. Is it something that during that type of gunfight, you just, you know, you would just walk by or run by your fallen officer just to still focus on the task at hand? I mean, there's really nothing else you can do for the man at that point.
Right.
How would you mentally kind of surpass that kind of obstacle?
One of the things that we did a lot was train and train and train. So, and some of our trainers were SWAT guys, and they said, listen, if I'm down, you carry out that fight. Your job is to neutralize that threat. So if I'm down, if I'm out of the fight, then I'm no good to you. So you need to continue on. You need to go and neutralize that threat and then let somebody else behind me worry about me. So Is it difficult to do? Absolutely. But at the same time, you know what you need to do. Because if you stop, your attention's on your fellow officer. Now, the person who's shooting at you or your fellow officer, they can take you out and take the next officer up. So you need to go neutralize that threat.
Right. Okay. And then Dan, I know the police department caught a lot of flack from people because they sent the robot in with the C4 to blow this guy up. What are your thoughts on that at this point?
Listening to Sergeant Larry Gordon, who was the negotiator, speaking with Micah Johnson at the time, who was a suspect, he had been speaking with him from, I know the estimates are anywhere from about 2.5 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
he made the determination this guy was not going to give up. This guy was set on what he was doing. He was going to carry this out to the end. And they made a split-second decision, not a split-second decision, but a decision on the spot to neutralize this the best way they could. And you can second-guess it over and over again, but unless you're in that situation, and I would never second-guess these guys because I wasn't in that stairwell with them that day. I wasn't on that floor. And I'm sure they thought about what they were going to do. And at the time, it was, we need to end this before more people get hurt. And they made the decision. It worked. And
yeah,
you can second guess it all, but they had to make that decision. I didn't have to. I'll never second guess them.
When you guys have gone to calls, even like, you know, calls that aren't as serious, maybe hypothetically a convalescent home or something where there's not really, you wouldn't really think there would be a threat. Is it always in the back of your mind that any call could be an ambush? Are you trained that way, Sean?
I would say yes, because you never know what a person's mindset is. So if you recall, maybe, I would say maybe 2 years ago when I believe it was either Downey or a department in that area that responded to a traffic collision. And in their mind, it was just a simple traffic collision. Traffic collisions occur every single day, probably hundreds of traffic collisions throughout California. Now, these officers were gunned down, responding to a traffic collision, not knowing that the person that crashed had just killed his cousin and also had a stolen car. So you have to, as bad as it may sound, you always have to be on high alert, responding to any call, because it could be an ambush or you simply don't know what the person's intentions are.
That is so wild, because not too long before the 2016 ambush, some guy rolled up to Dallas Police Headquarters and just started firing. I don't know if you guys remember that, firing into the building. Lobby.
Correct.
They chased him. He was in a van. Now the van was loaded with gun slots and all kinds of stuff to fight back and shoot back. They ended up having to, they shot the engine block out with, I think, a 50 cal. He ended up parking at a Jack in the Box. They were in pursuit of him. It was about 10 miles away. And then they had to blow the van up, and then they shot the guy, you know, with a 50 cal. But I think at that point, there's really nothing else you can do because you're endangering. Like Sergeant Gordon said, you have to go in now. We can't afford to wait because this guy could just come out blazing. I mean, he was just exchanging gunfire down that hallway. It was just, Dan, any other thoughts in regards to, you know, engaging in gun battles and gunfire with suspects?
I mean, it's just something you always have to be prepared for. You never know what the situation is going to be. One of the biggest misconceptions I think police have when it comes to the general public is the general public likes to second guess us based on what the call turned out to be and not what we knew at the time going in. We don't have all the information, so we're always on high alert. We're supposed to. That doesn't mean you don't get lackadaisical from time to time, but right. We try to avoid that. But yeah, you should always go in with that mindset that this could turn into something and I need to be prepared. And people we're dealing with need to understand that that's the mindset we're coming in with. And they need to help us out a little bit by being a little more understanding.
Right.
We're not getting, this is only this, so we don't need to be prepared.
Right. And then Sean, I think you told me that you're trained to overcome, so you're not trained to just make it cool. Like if someone has a knife, you need to overcome that situation. Do I have that right?
Correct. So anytime you are in any situation, you are trained to overcome whatever use of force that other person has. So if it's a hands, then you need to use an impact weapon or pepper spray or taser, something like that. So, and that is done to basically effect an arrest, no more, no less. So the person that officers are dealing with, they're the ones that dictate how much force we use. Are we up here? We down here, down here? It's really and truly up to them. So I've never come across a person that said, okay, I'm guilty, and turn around and almost put handcuffs on themselves. That does not happen. So a lot of people do not want to go to jail. So they'll do any and everything in their power to not go to jail. Right. And understand, people in the public need to understand, anytime you're taking a person to jail, On camera, it looks very ugly because people resist. So okay. You can ask any of these citizens that had to assist an officer and ask them how difficult it was, even if there were four or five citizens, how difficult it was to have one person put their hands behind a, behind their back if they don't want to. You can YouTube all these videos and you can see all these citizens also struggling. People say, well, they don't have training. There's still four or five people against one. So right. Once again, it looks bad on camera, but a person that does not want to, that does not want to go to jail, it's going to be difficult.
Okay. And then speaking of that, and I'll close it out on this, I'll ask you, Dan, has the use of cell phones recording you guys helped or hurt?
You know, it's just another obstacle. It shouldn't affect your job. If you're doing your job right in the first place, okay. It shouldn't bother you. But on the other hand, it's forcing us to be second guessed by people who are watching a situation and not understanding, like what Sean just said, how difficult that situation is. When somebody decides they're going to fight, I'm not going to use the same force as him. I'm going to go above and I'm going to get the job done. But that, of course, 9 times out of 10, that doesn't look pretty. It's made it harder than it should be, but it shouldn't affect our job. As long as you're doing your job right, you're going to come out okay.
Okay. And then one last thing for you, Dan, before we go to Sean's thoughts on it. The disrespect now for law enforcement, has that kind of taken you back a little bit?
The disrespect now has definitely escalated compared to, say, 5-6 years ago. It's yeah. definitely at an all-time high. I mean, it's annoying and it is a nuisance and it has made our job harder, but it's just something else we have to deal with. We can't stop doing our job because of it. There's still a lot of innocent people out there. There's still a lot of good people out there that deserve protection from us and deserve our help. And we're not going to leave them hanging because we're getting disrespect. The problem comes is when you start getting the disrespect that we're getting a lot from politicians and people not supporting what we're doing. And they're only doing it for votes. They're doing it to try to pander to the general public. That's when it starts to hurt. I can handle it from the general public. When the politicians start to turn on us, that's when it becomes a problem for law enforcement.
Okay. And then we'll go to you, Sean. Same question, the cell phone usage.
I personally never cared about the cell phone usage. Do not interfere. If I was making an arrest, I would tell people just stand back. And then if you want to get me, zoom in, and I'm fine with that. But okay. Don't interfere. Unfortunately, a lot of people, they want the narrative to fit their story. So they'll cut it and edit it and, you know, say this and say that and everything else to fit whatever narrative that they're trying to get or get past.
Right.
So I could care less because, like Dan said, if you're doing the right thing, you have nothing to worry about.
Okay.
But if the camera in and of itself is a great tool, but you need to look at the entire movie, so to speak, in order to get the complete story, not just cut and paste here and a little bit here and a sound bite there. That right there does not tell the entire story.
Okay. And then your thoughts on the treatment of officers nowadays, you know, the respect wise.
It's unfortunate. From my experience, most people don't care about the police until they need the police. So you could listen to a certain song or you can do this and you can do that, but it's not until you need the police that you see how valuable that they really and truly are. People don't understand when you go to the bank late at night, it's because there's an officer somewhere close by is the reason why you're not getting robbed. Right. People don't understand that because as I know plenty of criminals and criminals tell me, man, if y'all wasn't up and down this street, man, I rob and steal and from each and every house on the street.
Right.
But because you guys are visible, okay, now I need to take my actors somewhere else or I need to slow my roll or whatever the case is. Just having officers available makes people safe. They don't realize it.
Okay. Well, hey, I appreciate the two of you taking the time to spend with me on this and giving me your insight. And I want to thank you again. I'll get with you guys later and I appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for having us, man. I appreciate it.
All right.
No problem, Mike. Good talking to you, man.
All right. All right, fellas. I'll be in touch.